to die now.
Fight me.
You want to give a welcome to Zay? Whatever, say something.
All right,
say
everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. This is Kickin' Flicks.
Mm-hmm.
We are casually talking about martial arts flicks.
Yeah. Years of watching movies. We're not really experts, but we still enjoy the movies. So we want to talk about things that we've experienced over the time. And before we get started, I'm Rashad.
I'm Tracy.
And we are movie buffs when it comes to kung fu and martial arts movies. So we really like these type of movies. We just want to share this a few things with you guys. And it's not really reviews. We're just talking about having fun, you know? What we find in the movies, what was interesting about a movie, what made a movie good.
What makes the genre good.
Yes. I'm sure you guys are going to love that as well. So one thing we want to just shoot the breeze about. We were talking about a rating system, like how do we look at movies? Most people look at movies and say it was a good movie or bad movie, but sometimes you always look at things like, okay, then what makes it a good or bad movie? So we're talking about, first of all, choreography.
Right.
What is good choreography?
To me, the good choreography for a movie is where you get to see a lot of different angles. But you also get to see things that are practical.
Mm-hmm.
And then, too, definitely, I don't know if people understand how very exaggerated, like, a lot of the moves that you would see, because they have to slow it down so much so that you could actually understand what happened.
If
it happened in real life, it would happen with such rapidity. You know what I mean? Your eye mightn't even catch it at all.
Right.
So I like to see the way that the director and the choreographers and even the actors, the way that they are able to translate it onto film so that it feels real, you know what I mean? You feel in those different moments, and then how they even tell the story of the fight, what aspects they slow down, what aspects they speed up, you
right.
know what I mean? And then they turn and get it from a whole different other perspective again, too.
Yeah, because even with, there are certain movies, as you're talking about that, like certain movies, should I call names?
Yeah, man, go for it.
Daredevil. Oh my goodness, the choreography was horrible. Like, you know they were not fighting at all. You can see that they switch angles a whole lot, and they're really stiff. It was just horrible.
Right.
So, yeah, when you look at movies like that, where the choreography is just forced, no matter how much they try to learn the moves, you can see they're not martial artists. They have no training in it, and it's boring. Mm-hmm. So you're always looking towards, like, okay, then, how fluid are you? Like the Matrix.
Mm-hmm.
They took some training.
Right. Yeah. You could see that they were probably changed individuals at the end
of
everything they had to go through for that movie.
Right. So that's what the choreography we're talking about.
Yeah,
like, based on where it's forced and fake versus, okay, you did some work here.
Yeah.
You have some skills.
And it really does take a lot, because they end up doing months or sometimes years, depending on what the role is. And they have to put in a lot of work.
Right.
Like when, what's his face? Angelina Jolie, I think, was doing Tomb Raider. She had to learn like 7 new skills or crazy like that. And so, you know, she was taking on a lot of roles where she had to learn new skills. And that's a part of it. That's why these people get paid the amounts of money that they get paid, because they have to commit themselves in a way that the average person would really not expect.
Exactly. So that's why we're going to rate the choreography based on that. How forced does it look? How natural does it look? Is it, like you say, was it sped up or slowed down, or just think of it in practical terms? You know, is this worth it? Even so, what about the fantasy flying?
Oh, I love that. But at the end of the day, I like with the fantasy flying thing, it lends itself to all kinds of different interpretations, because you have, you know, sometimes they take the flying as you know, the Superman like laying flat kind of thing. But then a lot of times in these movies, it's more of a leap.
Right.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
It's more of a gliding leap. And so
it
seems more practical, because the way that your body is built, you will leap.
Right.
You know what I mean? You can leap forward and you can jump forward. So you can kind of make your imagination sort of go along with it a little bit better. If you have ever studied martial arts and you understand the amount of momentum that you can build up in your body, you can understand that, yeah, somebody could kind of run up at least that high on the wall.
On the wall, yeah.
Or do they can turn around and spin off of this and that. You know what I mean? And especially once you start incorporating strings and different rigging and stuff like that, then you can really start to get creative and start using like physics and stuff like that to do some really, really cool stuff and really start thinking about what all body mechanics, because I see some really cool stuff in these shows, man. It's like, I think I didn't know that the body could do that, but apparently.
Which is the good thing, right? Because now on the flip side of that, because you have the things that look beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the best way to describe it, so as you're talking about it, the waifu.
Right.
In Austin Powers.
Yeah.
You know, I hope my fighting team is ready. And he pulled him, but the string popped. But do they, I think when it comes to choreography and the flying thing, mm-hmm. how effortless does it look? Is it smooth? Or is it like, you can actually see where they're holding them up.
Yeah.
So I think that's a part of the choreography.
I know that sometimes I'm watching movies and like it's a good movie and I like the storyline, and then I'll see something where it's like, yeah, they definitely use strings for that, but I'm going to forgive them.
Because for that, really good movie. Yeah. You know what I mean? So yeah, so we have to look at all that when it comes to choreography, because there's so many things entailed in that, between the fighting, the wire, the movement, the flow, the fluidity of the characters. So,
and the commitment of the actors.
Right, definitely. I'm trying to remember the name of the movie. Donnie Yen, and he was fighting this guy. I can't remember his name, but he has this very short sword, and it was like really, really fast paced. Sammo Hung was a bad guy in it. He was like, he went to jail and stuff, and he came out. Anyway, it comes up, but the fighting in that, it looks like it was sped up,
mm-hmm.
but when I watch the behind the scenes, mm-hmm. no.
Okay.
That timing was just on point. It was just literally on point, not missing a beat at all. So the choreography, something like that, I think was really, really awesome. So, character building. How do you build a character in a movie? Any type of martial art movie. Now, before you answer that, because you have the old school kung fu movies,
mm-hmm.
and their characters are built differently, versus the middle age and then now the new age. So how do you put all that together in character building?
Boy, that's a big... That's a whole big, huge, massive question, eh? I feel like I will follow your lead. Because, okay, for me, the I think I maybe want to start at a different point.
Okay.
At the end of the day, your movie is your story, and your story is really based upon your characters and the way that they interact with each other and how they react to each other and all the rest of it. The depth of those individuals, the amount of details that, that the person who, you know, does the screenplay or who wrote the story in the first place, the amount of body that they put into the character really sort of matters, and sort of the way that sentences lend to one another until you get this sort of unfolding and gripping story now, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? So you're looking at maybe if it's an older character, or even especially if it's a younger character, how mature they are. You know what I mean? What kind of experiences they would have had or seem to have had based on how very serious they are, maybe mm-hmm. how aloof they are, or you know what I mean? And then sort of building a lot of the quirkiness into, because everybody is so individual. And so building in all the different idiosyncrasies and eccentricities, you know what I mean, into the different characters. Maybe they smoke a pipe, maybe they smoke cigars, maybe they play a particular instrument like a flute or something like that. Maybe they wear their hair a certain way, or they wear their clothes a certain way, so, they walk a certain way.
So the best way to sum that up, based on what you just said and what I'm also thinking, is why. People, though, I think a lot of movies don't give enough time or wait, like you say, to who this character is and why they're doing what they're doing in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
So by, like you say, those simple things, the way they dress, act, the things that they do, whether they smoke or drink, like it tells the story of why.
Exactly.
So it builds who this character really is. And if you could build each one of your characters that way in a short space of time, mm-hmm. it makes a whole lot more sense why they're doing what they're doing.
I'll give you an example that I see every now and then in the martial arts movies with monks. You mm-hmm. know, every now and then there comes a monk character. Part of being a monk, you know, is everybody's familiar with is shaving their heads.
Right.
But every now and then you have a character come up who, for some reason or the other, refuses to shave their head. Or I've watched even one where the guy's hair was so, he desperately wanted to shave his head, mm-hmm. but his hair was so hard that they just couldn't. And every, like, for me as a kid, you know, growing all the way up, the monks keep on coming back year after year trying to shave his head, and they couldn't do it. So, you know what I mean? Things like that, that sort of give you a little bit more of a look into who that person is or could be.
Right. I think that's very important. Also, not just building the character, but now, as you mentioned before, how do you as the viewer relate to that character?
Right.
Like, do you feel as if, do they really need to get revenge? Do you feel as if this guy really is a bad guy? Mm-hmm. You know, like, you have to feel that character and know exactly who they are in the movie for the movie to make sense.
Right.
You know, there are some movies who fail, and they fail miserably.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's some that suck you in so much
yes.
that you just can't forget these characters, you
Trust
know?
Trust me. Some of these scenarios are like out of this world.
A good character, and we talked about this before, Silver Fox.
Yes.
Like, that's a character that everybody knows. Everybody called their name. Everybody know mm-hmm. who Silver Fox was. Always a bad guy. Silver Fox, as far as I know, has never acted as a good guy. So you know the minute anyone with a white hair, they can always, pretty much a white bad guy.
Mm.
Especially if they call him Silver Fox, you're a bad guy.
They all the white-haired guys get a bad rap now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, you know. I don't know why. It doesn't make that sense. I mean, but they committed
that,
but
that,
to it.
That's actually a testament to how strong his character was right. in that movie.
Right.
Because now it's like you completely associate any white-haired, martial arts, Chinese-looking dude is Silver Fox. like right away.
He's
and that is really a test. That's a strong, exactly. strong testament.
That's
right
a strong
there.
Character building
that's
right
strong
there.
Character.
So we all know. So that's pretty good. When we're looking at character building, that's what we're going to be looking for. Cinematography. That's a big word.
Yes, cinematography. I think so, I'm going to let you. You're the professional. So let you rock and roll on that.
I think for me, cinematography is pretty much when you're looking at how they film it, where they film it, and how do they use the lighting to convey a story,
mm-hmm.
the time of year, the props, everything, all that comes into cinematography, you know, because you could film something in a blank. Okay, let's just go back. Most old school kung fu movies always start with a single person mm-hmm. doing some kata.
Right.
While they talk it.
Mm-hmm.
But the lighting tells the story.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes the dark room is just a light on them and they're doing mm-hmm. their stuff. You're ready getting sucked in.
Yeah.
Okay? That's cinematography. Versus something like, let's take House of Flying Tigers.
Okay.
I mean, the props and locations, everything was awesome. But how they filmed in those areas,
mm-hmm.
they kept away things that they didn't want you to see, and they put only inside that frame what they wanted you to see. It's beautiful, the colors, everything. So how enthralled are you when you're watching this?
Mm-hmm.
Because that's what's going to suck you in.
Right.
Looking at Shaw Brothers, you know, they had the whole lot, but they had everything that they filmed. Mm-hmm. And they built each set.
Right.
Again, how they filmed it in that set put you in a period, because they're all period pieces. I mean, you know, you have the clothing and the hairstyle that actually tells you which period they're talking about. But everything else and how they film it doesn't.
The buildings and the way that they're decorated on the inside mm-hmm. and everything helps to tell you what era they would be in. Because the styles of dress definitely do change. And then, obviously, it's a huge, huge, huge place.
Yes.
So there's so many different people and so many cultures within. So that's one of the things that I really look forward to, is seeing so many different kinds of dress, seeing so many different kinds of culture, mm-hmm. seeing just mm-hmm. even the different kinds of utensils, so that you could sometimes look from movie to movie and be like, oh, both of these or all three of these are from around the same era kind of
right.
thing. And you can start to trace it back and maybe do your own research, whatever. But all of that that gives you more story. You know
exactly.
what I mean?
All exactly. of that it backs makes up you the whole more story. Connected yes.
To it.
Yes. And that's the whole thing about cinematography. It after you have a good character running, you have a good plot going, like that, the whole era, whatever
you are. That's a character in itself.
Right.
And it might even be several characters, actually.
Thinking about it, even with sci-fi movies, mm-hmm. you have a movie that's in space. Why is it that you feel that you're in space?
Exactly.
They're showing you everything. So that's part of the cinematography right there. Someone who was very particular, and you can tell his movies off the top, like Michael Bay.
Okay.
You know this dude in movies as soon as you see it. Mm-hmm. But then that's the way he does the cinematography.
Right.
You know, he likes a lot of explosions and his color and everything. His lighting is all different, but you recognize his work. And you're going to find that even in the Kung Fu periods, like period movies, they're filmed a certain way. They mm-hmm. usually filled in some for us. Like sometimes they're sitting outside. The restaurant is outdoors. Mm-hmm. You realize you never really see nothing else.
Yeah.
That's yeah. cinematography. They could be in a busy city. Mm-hmm. But you wouldn't tell that.
That busy scene thing. I love how that is attacked because I'm thinking of like an opera scene, for mm-hmm. instance, where you have an audience and you have a cast and then you have a lot of waiters and staff and all the rest of it, and maybe guards and policemen and all the rest of it. And then there's several different conversations going on, and then mm-hmm. you have more than likely a very dynamic set in that you have a stage and then you have the lower platform and then the upper platform where there's also maybe tables and chairs and a balcony or maybe several sections on the balcony, and then you know what I mean, and how they interact and flow, and then there's halls and rooms off of those and stairways and all. So when the thing finally kick off, you know what I mean, you jump it down into this conversation, into that conversation, back out
right.
to see the whole picture and all the rest, and slide back in. Yeah, that's the cinematography helping to
exactly.
tell the story,
to tell that story,
you know,
which I really love. So we're going to be looking for that as well when it comes to movies. How well is the cinematography in that? I think one of the best ones I really enjoyed, Red Cliff. I mean,
oh yeah, yeah.
But anyway, we'll get to that later on.
Yeah.
Dialogue actually has to do more with the characters as well, because the dialogue helps the characters build in mm-hmm. the movie. Sometimes they say things that make no sense, or you would find that the director would have them drop a nugget here that is going to be revealed later on in the movie.
Right. There are a lot of foreshadowing.
Right. Now, there's sometimes they drop something and they forget about it. Mm-hmm. So you're like, why did they do that? Why did he say that? Mm-hmm. That makes no sense. It never
but
comes
sometime,
back.
But sometimes to me, when you see stuff like that, it's the same as anything that came from a book first mm-hmm. and then they translate it to the big screen. It's like watching Lord of the Rings, and then they do something in Lord of the Rings that is fully described in the book,
right.
but it's not like, you know, hardly even touched on in the movie, and you kind of wonder why even throw it in there if you're not going to say what it is kind of thing.
So if I didn't read the book,
I think it's the same kind of thing for the, and then especially because it is a completely different culture than ours, so certain things like that, even if it's unsaid within the culture, they might understand it, but because we're outside of the culture, mm-hmm.
we don't understand exactly why,
you know, we would need an explanation.
Right. That is true. So dialogue, again, like you said, different facets when it comes to dialogue.
Mm-hmm.
But it has to make sense through the movie as much as possible, even if you're in the culture. But if you're out, like you say, you're going to be a little bit confused.
Little things. But I think that it's just that same thing where if it comes from a book or it mm-hmm. comes from an earlier movie or something like that, then maybe certain details don't always get the weight that they maybe deserve.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I think dialogue,
like
we look at that.
Choice, I guess.
Yeah. That's true. And then the conversations, like I say, between the characters, mm-hmm. you know, that help build a character.
I really like honestly, to me, I really love dramatic sentences in movies. I mean, when I say dramatic sentences, I mean sentences that move the story along very quickly and very dynamically, mm-hmm. and even move the relationships of the stories on very quickly and very dynamically. Because I think when the dialogue is shallow, then that's when you sort of, you don't really figure out who the characters are. Yeah. You don't really connect to them all that much. After you've watched the movie, you maybe don't even remember much about the characters or something like that. You know what I mean? But if you have sentences where somebody says something that's really surprising, or maybe it goes off, and you know, the entire movie goes off in a direction that you had, it's like, hold on, you know what I mean? And then you sort of have to, but I think sentences, in a lot of the fantasy movies, for instance, it's like, you gotta find this jewel, or you gotta find this flower, you know what I mean? You gotta find this lake, or you gotta find this person, kind of thing. And so what takes you from where you might be in a desert to where you might be in an underground garden?
Right.
You know what I mean? Seconds later. It's a sentence, though. It usually is. You know what I mean?
If
the sentences are followed well enough, even though it otherwise would make no sense at all, you right there and then engage, yeah, man. So now they gotta go and get the pillow. They gotta get to the pillow, you see? That have the riddle on it. And once they get there, you know, and then you right there with it. If the dialogue is strong,
it's strong enough, and it pulls you in.
It's cohesive enough.
You're right. Okay. One of my favorites, locations.
Oh, yeah.
Like, what is... Oh, no. Someone asked me that before. What do you mean by locations? Did you shoot in the studio?
No, not all the time. Location.
It's very important, even in real estate.
Yeah, and everything. Locations. I mean, that's telling you where you are.
Right.
And what you really expect. It give you an understanding of the terrain and the weather.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then what kind of challenges might be expected if a fight goes down here. You know what I mean? Whether it's nighttime or daytime, and you know, whether they're using a lot of shadows, is it something very bright, very colorful? Are there a lot of obstacles? You know what I mean? Just the nature of it. But sometimes some of the sets are so beautiful and elaborately done, and even the CGI, you know what I mean? A lot of it is so awesome when you start going through, exploring different landscapes, and especially exploring maybe caves and water features and stuff like that. Gardens, especially beautiful, beautiful gardens, a lot of the times. And some of them, it's interesting sometimes, the ones that you can't even tell which ones are man-made versus which ones.
Which is good.
You know,
I'll tell you this funny thing, right? Off the topic with martial arts. When I first watched 300, I didn't know I was done in the studio.
Yeah, no, right? I knew because I was following the making of it the whole time.
I didn't know.
And their set was actually really, really cool because they did a bunch, the way that they used their set, it was drawn and created in such a way that you could stand it straight up and then they would do certain scenes. And then they could turn it this way, or they could turn it that way, they could turn it other things, and then the angle would make it look like it's a completely different thing. And they multipurposed the mess out of that thing.
They got me.
Initially, they got me.
But then, when you look at everything, the choreography, the character building, the cinematography of that, the 300, I was already sucked in that I didn't really notice that, something's off with this or off with that. It was just like, you already sucked me in.
And then with them, especially like the coloring and all the rest of it, like it was very, very sort of very tightly well done. It was really tight knit.
Now, I'll keep coming back to this because I find that one of my favorite movies I like to watch is House of Flying Daggers.
Okay.
Now, when it comes to locations in that, oh man, like that was just beautiful.
I agree.
The vast landscapes.
I agree.
Throughout the year.
Yes.
Even when they were inside
the colors, so bright and pretty, and just and the attention to symmetry.
Yes.
Oh man.
So when you talk about locations. I think House of Flying Daggers got it down pat.
Yeah.
They did. They really did.
And another movie that was similar with regards to those things would be the curse of the golden flower.
Okay.
And then the legend of the golden scorpion or something like that. Or legend of the black scorpion.
Black scorpion, I think. Legend of
the black scorpion. Yeah. But that one was more, because in Flying Daggers and Curse of the Golden Flowers, it was a lot of rainbow. Like, it was just plenty colors.
Beautiful. Vibrant.
Yes. But with the black scorpion, the legend of black scorpion, it's like a lot of gold, mm-hmm. a lot of black, mm-hmm. and like cream, and you know, and white woods and stuff like that. So, but it flowed throughout the entire thing. It was so cohesive.
So I'll skip ahead, because along with location comes wardrobe.
Yeah.
Wardrobe. Again, we're talking about period pieces.
Right, yeah.
Clothing that they wear. And again, the movies that you call Curse of the Golden Flowers, Black Scorpion, House of Flying Daggers, and there are many others. But when you let's talk about Curse of the Golden Flower first of all.
Right.
Come on, the armor.
Yeah.
The armor alone.
Yeah, the chrysanthemum.
I can't say
it in my mouth.
Yes. So, like the soldiers, or even, let's go to Hero.
Okay, Jet Li. Yeah.
Remember, they had vast landscapes as well. And they had like the blue and the yellow and different colors and stuff like that. But the wardrobe of the soldiers, again, when you think about that for a second, as a movie maker, you have, let's say, 200 people just to act as soldiers.
Mm-hmm.
You need wardrobe for 200 of them.
Yep.
And so when it comes to your cinematography and actually doing a fighting scene and everybody's fighting, that means that every wardrobe gotta be on point.
And on point in terms of being able to fit the guys properly and stuff like that. But that'll also be on point in terms of people are going to critique your movie.
Yes.
And so you have to, if Details. It happened in this dynasty, then this part of this dynasty, then you want to be as accurate as you can be. And then, you know, sometimes if it's a particular character, they might have had some very special armor. Because, you know, you'll see the armor of the foot soldiers is going to be different than the cavalry. It's going to be different than your generals and stuff like that. Because I pay attention to all of that, and that helps you even with the movie moving along the same way that would help somebody on the battlefield to understand who they're supposed to be listening to or looking to and stuff like that. As you're watching it, you'd be like, oh, so that's the general over there, and so that's why he's moving like that, and then, oh, the cavalry's coming from over here, and the infantry is over here, and oh, okay, and so then it starts to make sense because now you have an understanding of what all of those uniforms actually mean.
Yeah, I find that even again, going back to Red Cliff, when you think of the battlefield, when they were doing all the different formations, just again, think of thousands, as a movie maker, thousands of extras, and each one got their own uniform. I mean, like, that's massive. So when you see things like that, it's not CGI, because a lot of people use CGI now, they use probably like 20 or 30, and then they just duplicate everything afterwards. But no, when you have a movie where you have literally hundreds and thousands of people and everybody have on their own uniform. Like, okay, you know what? You get a point. Just for that.
Yeah, because, I mean, just keeping track of all of those people, man.
Making sure everybody have on something.
Make sure everybody get paid.
Is it not a thing? All right, so I just skipped to that. But another thing that I find, besides the conversation or the dialogue between them, music. This is something I think a lot of people overlook.
Oh, man. Damn.
But I think it's so important.
Music is like its own character. Like, to me, because the score is its own character versus the soundtrack is its own character in movies. And, you know, especially if you, the theme music in some of these, like maybe it's a love story. And so there's every time the couple gets together, then a certain promise song. Yeah, goodness gracious. What was that one? There's one where it's a Korean one. Oh, God. And one of the characters, again, is named Gina. All I remember is, it's Gina, it's the guy, and Soon Lee is, and it's like, all through the whole movie, it's Soon Lee. Gina, and then it's like the same music, and it's like, I love the movie, so I ended up watching it a bunch of different times, and then I'm like in the supermarket, like minding my own business, and the music is playing in my head, and then like randomly I'm saying out loud, Gina.
But they got you. All right. Yeah. All right. They got you in the music. But that's it. Yeah, I think music is music is very important to it. Because it also separates, like you say, okay, then, if you have a battle scene.
Yeah.
So you have your music for that, and you know, usually heavy drums. And then just to change the pace by the change in the music, you get to a point where, again, you might see the lovers come together, so the music change. So your whole concept of what's going on, your whole demeanor changes just by the music, and you don't even realize it.
And then what's cool about it is, like, when people, because, you know, sometimes it might be a really heavy scene, and it's like, you know, a lot of going on within the music, and you have all your emotions sort of ratcheted up, and then it just sort of changes, and not necessarily that the scene changes, but that the music changes, and so then you know, okay, something new else is happening. Maybe there's more danger. Maybe there's safety. You know what I mean? That the music is just completely instrumental in sort of taking you and transporting you to where you need to go. Every all of these different aspects, we all just talking about how many details you can pack into a story. You know what I mean? So that you can as fully as you can translate what it is, or give to people what it is that you're trying to convey.
Definitely. And lastly, but not least, not least of all, the plot. Now, before you talk about the plot, because I always have a problem with this. Sometimes, there are many, I've seen different ways the plot is actually unfold, okay? And I see a lot of movies outside of the genre of Kung Fu or martial arts where they sometimes give you the ending before the beginning, then give you a lot of little piece of art, finalize it. Or sometimes it goes all the way through. But again, I think this goes back to what's happening and why is the movie being made? Why are these people doing these things? And that gives the overall plot. Like, okay then, is this a plot of revenge? It is. Is it a plot of two lovers torn? Is it a plot of conquer? Like with war? Is it like, what is this plot all about? And I think the sooner you figure out what the plot is, if a movie, if a director shows you what this plot is all about, for example, there's a movie by my favorite director, Akira Kurosawa. Oh, gee, what's this guy named? Anyway, it was this lone swordsman who went rogue. Sword of Doom. And he was just killing people just to test his skills. So you knew who the character was. He didn't talk much. But when he did talk, you just realized that he wanted to kill you just for the fun of it. In order just to test his skill or see if he's better than you. Right? So the whole plot of this movie was one of where the director wanted you to hate this character. Because this character was actually one of the main characters through the entire movie. The hero didn't come into like mid-part. So you're trying to figure out, can anyone stop this dude? Like, you're so upset at him and angry at this time. You're like, please kill him. So the plot was like, but I just want you to die.
Oh, it's like how everybody loved to hate Joffrey and Game of Thrones. It's like, when is he going to die? Everybody else dying. All my favorite people dying. This nigga wouldn't die.
It was like brilliant.
Yeah.
And when the hero finally came into the whole movie, he didn't even seem like a hero. That was the weird part about it. He was like, man, he could kill you, you know? It was just just unlikely. So that plot, to me, was not even one of revenge. It wasn't one of battle. It wasn't one of love. It was just a plot of, this is what happens when someone with skills go rogue.
You remind me of a similar movie I watched recently. I'm going to look up when we post this, the name and all the rest of it, right? But it was about this monk, this crazy monk who loved to kill. he had a death thirst, you know what I mean? But he was very righteous about his killing. He couldn't wait to find criminals. I'm serious, he couldn't wait to find somebody violating somebody else so he could kill them. You know what I mean? Any kind of justice. If he figured out you was a thief, he coming for you. If he figured you was a rapist or you a murderer or whatever, any kind of infraction that you were, he vibing hard and he was like this scary, like he was a scary sort of extra big dude, big heavy staff kind of thing. And he was just mean and sort of angry with it. And it was like, you were very torn because he would so brutally kill these people. You would be like, but then he was a good guy.
Yeah, so you tore it for you. Yeah.
So, And that's a character I don't think that I'm ever going to forget. You know what I mean?
That's true. Because a good guy, you're killing people. That's interesting.
And he was very, like, he was not killing no innocent people. That would trip him right out. You mess with children or something like that. He just was in the most... And the thing about it, whoever did the choreography and all the rest of it, and like the special effects, it was gory, man. Like it wasn't playing, but like it was showing everything, like getting smashed up and spooed all around. And it's like, whoa, okay. Alrighty then.
Alright. Yeah, plots like them I kind of like because they throw a loop at you. They challenge the whole good guy or superhero is supposed to be a certain, but kind of like. I wouldn't say it's a really awesome movie, but I like the concept of Hancock, a guy who had superpowers, but he was a drunkard.
He's a regular guy.
Right, he's just a regular dude. Yeah. So I really love that whole concept, like that, you know, about that. So when you have a character like that that doesn't suit the norm, like good should always prevail over evil.
Mm-hmm.
Like there are some movies where you're trying to figure out did he win? You know? What just happened? I think I really love plots like that because they make you think and they stay away from mainstream, I guess, movie making and plots of how they do it. So when it comes to plot, it's just like, are you going to stick to the script and be normal? Or are you going to mix it up to the point where I can't tell what's coming up next?
Right.
Like, I tell you right now, my wife, she hates when I watch movies because I'm like, oh, this is going to happen.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to happen.
Predictable.
It's horrible.
Really
like,
predictable, but. I'm like, okay.
You're not even trying.
Okay, we got you. So you're in love with that one. You're going to kill this one. All right, we got it.
No. If you could mix it up to the point where I say, that got to happen and it doesn't happen, I'm like, what? Okay, what's happening here? In fact, there was a TV show that came on. The only reason I don't really watch many TV shows to the end called The Last Ship. When I first started to watch it.
I watched it. I started watching it.
They were killing off the stars.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Like the first couple of lives. Like, what the hell?
Yes. That's like Game of Thrones.
Yes.
Game of Thrones was just kill everybody.
I love plots like that.
Me too.
Because it throws a loop for you thinking like, oh, you're the star. You're not going to go nowhere. Like, like Ned Stark.
That's why I like, honestly, that's why I really like Netflix. And I like a lot of these series that you can get, especially in the martial arts stuff. Because... you know, I open something up and it's got 62 episodes, man. You know, you could afford to let some people get killed off, and then there's all kind of new characters and it's new stuff to learn and new. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah,
that's good stuff. Kind of thing.
That's how a plot should be. I guess I really don't like it when there is one hero that make it through. It's like Steven Seagal.
Mm.
Tell me how many movies Steven Seagal be in and when he got hit. Yeah, think hard.
And he don't really move much of his body beyond the elbow.
Like, what's going on?
In the movie. Now he'll mess you right up in real life. Steven Seagal, we ain't trying to play with you.
No, sir. But I'm just saying, at least take a hit once in a while, you know?
Yeah.
Take a little bit.
Yeah, we like watching your demonstrations way more than the movies.
Exactly. Yeah, so overall, these are the things we're going to be looking for the movies. And I know some people are actually trying to figure out, well, how are you going to do that with Kung Fu movies? That's just Kung Fu movies. That's just bad sub.
Well, we'll show you guys why we have gotten so sucked into this through time. You know what I mean? There's a lot to offer. It's amazing how it's all evolved from those early movies where you were seeing, like, Jackie Chan, those and in the 60s and 70s, and like even just listening to the sound effects now versus then, looking at the visual effects now versus then, looking at the different locations, the quality of the camera work, just how much bigger they're able to go with a lot of things, and how much more of the imagination people are able to really explore in these kinds of times. Because, you know, we like period pieces. There's also like a lot of great pieces that are based in current times, you know what I mean? And all of them, like you said, we're looking at the plots, we're looking at how they use the locations, we're looking at the way that they use their cameras in order to tell the stories, we're looking at the wardrobe to see, you know, how realistic and it is to us, and how much it feels like we're right there in the movie.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Or maybe even just looking at it, admiring it, wishing we could be a part of it, you know? Because sometimes I wanted to go and wander around those sets, you know? They look amazing.
Just to see how they look. Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just going to be talking a whole lot about exactly that, like why we got sucked into it, why we like it so much. More than other genres, we still take a lot from other genres, things like The Great Wall of China.
Yeah.
You know, things like that. What's the one with Jet Li and Jackie Chan were in? I call them American movies because they're not really like
the Hollywood ones.
Yeah. We may talk about some of them. I don't know.
Some are good. Some are okay. We'll see. There's so much out there to even go on.
All right. So that's us, guys. Kicking flicks.
Yeah, man.
And this is our first episode. We're going to be talking of just shooting the breeze, that you know what we're going to be doing. And we're going to start talking about new movies as we go on. So stay tuned to us and stay tuned to the channel. Hope to hear from you guys. Leave comments if you need to. Ask questions. Ask about reviews about movies that you
like
watched.
And subscribe.
Definitely. All right. Good.
Cool.
You're good.
But your style is no match for mine.